I think if you want to run an ABM strategy, you should buy an ABM platform for sure. But how does the ABM platform, how does ABM period plug into your overall go-to-market strategy for a calendar year, right? Or the next calendar year across different pillars, themes, audiences that you want to go tackle? Like what we see is a lot of people will, it'll be like the tool tail will wag the strategic dog because these things aren't connected. And so like a digital marketer in a vacuum is just going to go do what they can do in their tool and execute a plan against what they know that they can go and do. But like, how does that actually connect to a marketing leader strategy, right? Now, at a 3, 4, 5, 10 person marketing organization, maybe you don't have that problem, right? Maybe it's fine.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, we're going to be in for a good discussion today because it's going to help you hopefully clear up a lot of confusion that you may have, because we're going to try to make sense of the marketing technology landscape. Woo, it's gone crazy and it's going to continue to be that way. And hopefully to help us, you know, find some clarity in all this is George Huff, because we have him on the show today. Welcome, George.
Oh, good to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Now, before we actually get into our discussions, because we're going to talk about also a recent research study that came out and some findings from that, that I think just really validate what we just said, what I just said a moment ago. But if you can, tell us a little bit about your background and experience.
So my background is I first started working at the beginning of the 2000s, primarily web design, internet geek. And as marketers started caring more and more about content and blogs and social media and all that stuff, found myself in a lot of consultative positions, just as someone in the room that could help make sense of it all, even back then when it wasn't as crazy, but still felt crazy relative to what marketing had been prior. And so I found myself in these spaces with large brands who are trying to navigate the complexity of bringing a brand story to life across all their channels, and do so in a way that was consistent, repeatable, had the right governance, et cetera, et cetera. So a few more chapters in that story, but I'll leave them out for now.
Well, and part of that, I think you had the opportunity to found an organization. You stepped away. Now you're stepped back in. All those things, which to me, I think just fits into what we're kind of talking about here, because there's, you know, chaos exists everywhere, and we try to find some clarity and certainty in our decisions. And so, with that, talking about this confusion, trying to find clarity. There was a piece of research that you studied before we started actually recording here, and I think it's really important for you to share. If you could, please go ahead and do that.
Yeah, it's basically a bit of research that we work with Forrester on. And basically, the quote line is, only 1% of marketing leaders say their content planning and execution strategies are seamless. So the thing that they want to go spend a bunch of time on, our strategy to take our business and products and services to market, only 1% of them feel like it actually translates into execution. So that's really, when we think about why we exist, like that's the gap that we're aiming at and obsessed about. But that's a kind of, I mean, it's alarmingly low number. I think that most people would not guess it would be that low, but that's pretty low.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost non-existent. It's like nobody's doing, I mean, 1%, if you start looking at probably the statistics and associated with that particular study, that may be 1-2 companies if you're lucky.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So that means we're talking about what is referred to as a fundamental marketplace problem.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has it.
Yep.
And we're all trying to make some sense out of it. And there's a slew of ways that we're doing it. Yes, some depends on size of organization. And there's all these different factors. But even when you start looking at these very large organizations that are providing, you know, marketing technology solutions, and ones that we, like, for example, let's just call one out, HubSpot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a HubSpot, you know, customer. There's a lot of gaps with that particular solution, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of gaps with every single tool that we're trying to close.
Yeah.
And so what if I'm sitting there and trying to make sense with it, one of the things that you said to me, which I think is like common sense and obvious, but oftentimes we forget to think about it. It's like, what are we trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
So start me in the discussion of how do I make sense of all of this, so I'm not, you know, one of the 99 percenters.
I think most people probably already are one of those 99%ers, and I think that's why they only answer it that way. But you know, I think stepping back, just the observations I've had in my career, the brands that do it best in terms of bringing their products and services to market and having marketing programs at all, they really, really start with the why and the story and the strategy and the briefing side first. Now, that's also common sense. I'll say a lot of common sense things on this podcast, I'm sure. But they start with that, right? And then what happens is they kind of have this like chuck it over the fence model to different parts of the marketing organization that can help them create content or do whatever it is. And like, as that sort of gets further and further away, multiple layers, multiple divisions, groups, whatever, the silos, that initial thing is like, when you kind of try to like, you go, okay, well, how do I, this was like my core insight. I'll pause for a second. My core insight for starting Opal was when I got kind of like plugged in to a machine at a giant shoe company out of Beaverton, Oregon. I'm not going to name names. And it was like, hey, we've got a bunch of global social media campaigns going on constantly. And what happens is this one executive says, hey, what are we doing with X? Whether that's like a certain category or a certain region or whatever, certain product line, whatever. And the amount of like back and forth email chains, nights and weekends to put something into a nice tight presentation for that executive, like that the calories that were spent on that, like it would blow your mind, like the inefficiencies in it, right? And so I, being a more of a systems and technology person, was like, geez, if you could build a product that could do this, wouldn't that be great? And that's what we actually went and built and pitched. And you know, our first year we have Nike, Nestle, Starbucks, Beats by Dre, and Levi's as our first five customers. Like, who does that? And so that was like our sort of initiation into the problem. And you know, fast forward several years and iterations of our product and platform, we've only seen that like there's even a bigger outer ring of chaos outside of just like social media, obviously. And so it was really, you know, it's like going back to your core question of like, how do I not be one of those 99%ers? It really comes down to like, what are the, like most software that you go, like you mentioned HubSpot, right? Most software doesn't account for hierarchy within organizations. And strategy and hierarchy kind of go hand in hand, right? Like the strategy tends to come through the hierarchy. And so like, name a piece of software that actually includes hierarchy in it, like to really account for the human side of hierarchy, right? That like, okay, Jim, you're two rungs up for me. And so when you ask me a question, oh, I'm going to like work on an answer, right? Like it's not, I'm not going to be flippant with you. I'm not going to be, you know, there's a human dynamic of hierarchy. And so most software doesn't account for that. And that's really been the core insight of Opal from the beginning, is that hierarchy exists. And people want to look good, and bosses want to run their organizations and feel like it's tight and be able to say that I'm in the 1% and not the 99%. But it really does start with what is the calorie burn of your organization if you're trying to align strategy and execution? Like, how many calories do you actually spend on that? It's a lot. It is insane at every one of these organizations. And so that's that's like what that stat means to us.
Okay. So I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you as far as the vernacular that mm-hmm. I hear people use and talk about, and they use the word visibility.
Mm-hmm.
I yeah. don't have visibility into my business. Mm-hmm. I don't yeah. know what the sales reps are doing. I don't know mm-hmm. what marketing's doing. I don't know where we're getting the best ROI on our spend. I don't know. And they always talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really what yeah. you're referring to?
Yeah, it's exactly what I'm referring to. We kind of think about it as visibility and alignment and efficiency, right? Visibility being I have the ability to just go and see what's going on without it like taking a lot. Alignment being I know what they're doing and I'm happy with what they're doing. They know what I want and they're doing it, right? Like there's that alignment piece. And then efficiency is, again, going back to the calories you burn. Right now, most people are living in an inefficient system. They are spending a bunch of calories on trying to understand alignment and visibility. And so that's really the core value prop of Opal, of what we do and how we think about the world, is like, how do we actually make it easier for everyone to be aligned? And I think that, you know, our sort of stance on that has evolved over the years. As you run into, you take your product and you put it in a different situation, you're like, oh my God, it totally doesn't work for this kind of an organization, but it does for this kind of organization. Well, what's the characteristics of those? And, you know, so you really have to understand how all these like different organizations are, they work, what, you know, what are they B2B? Are they B2C? What vertical are they in? How big are they? All of these things are sort of like requirements that we've learned over, 10 years of doing this, that are really interesting. We're like the world's foremost archaeologist on like marketing organizations, workflows, and, connecting strategy and execution.
Okay. So you bring up a very interesting point. I'd love to get your take on it, because you also had an opportunity to have a little bit of break in there, and you see, and you come back and the world mm-hmm. has changed and it's continuing to change mm-hmm. at a rapid rate. And now we're throwing all this whole AI thing into an old mm-hmm. ways. But we focus here on this show on B2B. B2B, I would dare to say, if you looked at that study, if there were any B2B organizations in there, none of them probably have it right.
No.
We're just behind. It is what it is. So if you start talking about, though, the transformation that's currently taking place and some of those shifts that we've seen, what have you seen that for you is, either compelling or head knocking in regards to B2B in marketing?
Yeah, I mean, I think B2B organizations, I think like just the nature of B2B, it doesn't feel as exciting as B2C. You can't take as many risks. You feel like, right? Like, so there's constraints in that way, right? It's more of a professional sale, I suppose. But it doesn't mean that you can't create, like I'm as a, like my background is in the creative field. So like, again, I was a designer. But I think about all these things as constraint, right? And I think that, if I was going to knock my head against the wall, it's like, well, these things don't matter to us because we're just B2B. And so we're just going to continue to like put the coin in the meter and do the same thing over and over again. Like there's a less of a drive for innovation. But I just think that that's like such a missed opportunity. So I think about it through that lens. But at its core, I think that you have to be really, really organized. Going back to like my desire for things to be in the right place, that's like a very core fundamental thing of our platform. But I think that feeling like you're organized, understanding how the field looks, and then like creating that space for creativity, and it's not, if the writing is going to be kind of pulled away from us for AI and the sort of like asset generation, maybe someday pulled away for AI, I think where you get creative is sort of strategy. It's sort of like the, like you're never going to turn your strategy over to AI, I don't think. I mean, maybe who knows? Like maybe one day everything will be AI. So I think that ability to break through comes through creativity, not through kind of like giving up and saying, oh, well, we're just B2B, so we can't be creative,
Well, that's, and I think what you're saying and what I'm hearing too, is that that's quite a part of the counterintuitive nature of actually differentiating yourself is that, and this is oftentimes the pitfall that we walk into. And this is where I think AI absolutely does have constraints. And I'm struggling with seeing how it can get out of it. And that is that AI is only pulling from what already has existed. Mm-hmm. So talking about strategy, well, that means the strategy was already done by somebody else. So if the strategy is already done by somebody else, if I apply it and I try to execute it, doesn't that mean I'm just going to look like everyone else? It kind of puts that monkey wrench in that whole creative thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So if I'm saying I need to do things different, I need to step out. There was a, and cause I need to stand out. There was a finding from a book that I read, that basically said that organizations, actually experience a 10x growth benefit by doing marketing in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that would be something for, as an impetus to say, okay, I don't want, the AI
exactly. That's well.
Because yeah. I'm supposed to be like everybody else and be in a red ocean.
Yeah.
So how are you actually using that and helping that to be applied, in new execution opportunities?
Well, it's interesting because I think I have like my spin on AI. I think, right, where this nets out is like, think about when you have your ideas. Do you have your ideas when you're actually like sitting down trying to have ideas? Or do you have them like when you're on a walk or when you're cooking food or like when you're like, you're just, your idle mind is wandering. And so I think that the benefit of AI for marketing isn't so much to like, oh, push the button, get the Facebook post or whatever the thing is, right? Or the LinkedIn post or whatever. I think it's like the way that I think about it is like, if a marketer goes from being the right, like, especially in a smaller organization where you're like, you're doing everything yourself. Like, what if AI can do some of the heavy lifting and it gives you more space to think creatively about how you would break through? And so AI can kind of just be this like, oh, well, it's doing a translation for you, or it's like doing a variation in a different tone of something that you wrote, or like that. So that's like how we're implementing it. I mean, we're basically bringing like GPT-4 to content creation because it just kind of makes sense there. So it can lift a bunch of the tasks. Like a great example, for instance, is international organizations. So if you're having a team that's like, oh, they're the ones that are translating it to Korean for us, and like our team in Korea, that's what they do. Okay, well, are you really tapping into their like instincts and creativity, or are you just like using their sort of language translation as like what their core benefit is? And you're like, well, we don't need that anymore. Well, okay, well now you're gonna be kind of probably stodgy in the Korean market. So like, how can you actually like fold those people in, right? There's all kinds of like really cool possibilities that come to life with AI. So I don't think it's so much of like AI is gonna develop our tactics for us, because you're totally right. Like if I ask an AI today of like, hey, we're launching a new sustainable shoe. Tell us like five marketing activation ideas. It's going to tell you five ideas that exist today that have already been done, to your point, right? But like if you're writing about that shoe and you want to make it more concise, or you want to make it like a lighter tone, or you want to say, you know, whatever, say it in haiku, like AI can do that so fast. And so like, again, there's going to be some areas where I think it is repetitive, and other areas where I think it can do heavy lifting to free you up to think more creatively. Not maybe about the words and copy, maybe it's about strategy. Like I don't quite know. But I do know the fundamental truth of like my best ideas have never come when I try to like force them. You know, it's like really a weird gray area of like doing something else leads to this like me solving like a big problem. I don't know.
I think you were, so it reminds me of a quote, and I can't attribute it at the moment, and I apologize to the source, but it was something along the lines of, you're not going to find your greatest idea from Google.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you're right. And it because so much has been done. And it's not to say that, you know, like life is remixed too, right? So it's like taking a little bit of this, taking a little bit of that, spinning it in a new way, doing it, you know, like nothing's really ever truly original. I think it's just more of like finding ways to create time to be inspired, understand your core problem set, understand what's been done, and like then letting the idle mind, the mind do the mind thing, where it's like weaving all those together to the aha, that feels like a new idea. But it's really just remix of all these other things, and you know, isn't that's what AI is to a certain extent too.
Well, so I've had the luxury and benefit of being able to interview some people. I've been podcasting for 9 years. I have a different podcast, and on that podcast, I actually had a few of the greatest minds in creative thinking as an opportunity to interview. And if you peel back what they're all talking about, it really comes down to what you just said and doing and trying to do it in a scientific manner, and that is taking and two things that could be even potentially unlikely pairs, finding a way to put them together. That's part of the creative process. You have to have and improve people's creative thinking skills in order to be able to drive innovation. One has to happen before the other. And so, like you're saying, I have to have space dedicated for it. You know, it's like, got to do these things, and we're going to improve our creative thinking skills because that's going to actually get to the point to where we're being more innovative in what we do. AI can't do that.
No, and I think like AI can assist you, but it won't do like that's why like our positioning on AI basically at Opal is marketers as editors, right? Because like an editor can sift through a lot of different ideas, concepts, whatever, and be like, no, that's the good one, that's the good one. So like AI also doesn't have any taste, zero taste. And so you know it can write perfect grammatical sentences. It can do that. It can do that way better than I can, but it doesn't have taste, right? It doesn't say like, you know, I really think this is going to resonate with our audience. And so like just being able to kind of like a little bit of Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, try different things, blah, 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 and have it at your disposal and be like, yeah, I took all these different things. I had some ideas. AI had some ideas. It just like became this whole thing. And then like, boom, this is the thing that's going to work, we think, for our audience. So I think it's interesting because right now marketers are editors, but you also have copywriters and designers. So I think those fields, like what becomes of those fields in the future? I think those folks are really going to have to think about how they differentiate beyond the AI thing. Because I think it's tough to like, you know, like if your job is translating from US English to Japanese, like that job is probably going away, you know? But so it's like, how do you, I my, the sort of altruistic, sort of hopeful, optimistic in me says, you know, how do you actually fold? I think about translations, like there's a lot of global customers, but how do you fold your team into being collaborative collaborators rather than just use those extensions that are only translators, if that makes sense, right? To get even more ideas.
Right. And that's kind of what they're even saying is that we if you look at the research, talking about research, and we look at the rate of innovation, we are sitting here and we're thinking probably this has probably been one of the most innovative times in human history. And it actually hasn't been. The rate of innovation has actually been decreasing at an increasing rate. And primarily, one of the foundational components and elements of it is the modern day educational system that we operate under. Back in 1980, Dr. George Land did a study where he created this essentially screening tool for NASA scientists because NASA wanted to become more creative and innovative, and they wanted to hire people that had the that ability. And the numbers were extremely low. And so that caused them to say, why? They did a study on young kids, and they found that their creative thinking was higher than the NASA scientists and the ones that
the education system suppresses sort of like the free thinking or whatever, right? Like,
correct.
Yeah.
So yeah. Essentially,
would it surprise you if I told you that I wasn't a very good student?
I mean, the same thing. So a lot of, now, unfortunately, they medicate a lot of us.
yeah, totally. That insult to injury.
Exactly. So it's like, okay, wait. We need to stop and take a look at how we actually approach and think about the development of our strategy first.
Yeah. Yep.
Are we being, you know, creative and innovative in our thinking? And have we you know, created that environment, nurtured that environment? And I would dare to say that's also why a lot of, especially organizations go out and hire agencies is because they're not dedicating time and effort. They got to get stuff done, right?
Oh, yeah. And if you look at it, what are they doing? They're in meetings, aligning the whole time. Like you go to like, I've like, you know, again, a lot of my peers in the world are out at, again, a certain shoe company in Beaverton. And you're like, yeah, I'm triple booked all day. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what are you even doing? Like, I'm like, you building something, you making something, you creating something? Or like, no, I'm just like, it's a status update on this and a status update on this and alignment. I'm not saying that Opal can solve every alignment issue under the sun. I think that what I'm saying is that there's got to be a better way that starts to liberate your sort of humans to do what humans do best, which is like free association when given lots of like creative input and space to think. And it probably is like children are like that because they have so much time to just think crazy thoughts and not be encumbered by like reality, you know? And I think that as adults, you just get, you know, again, it starts with our schooling, but like everything starts to feel really boxed in. And the beauty of being a CEO, honestly, is like even an organization creates boxes within boxes within boxes. Like you can't break that. So I'm going to get on a tangent. You mind if I get on a tangent real quick? So keep in mind, like I started the company with some co-founders. I'm a product person, designer. Like that's my, I'm excited, I'm creative field. And I was like, okay, let's make this certain kind of structure in our product. And okay, cool. Done. Fast forward 10 years. I come back into the CEO role and people are like, well, we can't change that. And I'm like, this thing right here? Like, yeah, we can't change that. Like, that's just how Opal does it. And that's just, we can't change that. And I'm like, not only am I the CEO, like, but I'm the one that did that 10 years ago. You know what I mean? So I'm like, no, you can totally, like, let's break those rules. Like, let's break this rule. And that was like one of the fundamental things that helped us as we were kind of like going through a turnaround to like think differently because, you know, an organization does create that. And so I think as leaders, you also have to think about how you're, you know, what sort of like norms have you created or rules within your org that, you know, no longer need to be there. I think that that's part of any organization sort of like transformation and jump to like that newer, better state. Anyway, that's my tangent.
And thanks so it's kind of funny. We're sitting here talking about how to make sense of the marketing technology space. And, you know, we're talking about these things, but I think we have to find the connection. There's dots here to connect.
Yep.
So if we start, what am I trying to accomplish? right? Mm-hmm. Do I need to be in the box? You know, maybe the time for you and your organization is that, right now we just need to be in the box. Because even when you start talking about leadership and leadership strategies, when things are going on, you know, we need a person who's going to help get it in line.
Okay,
so now we get things in line. And then we need to start thinking about doing things a little bit differently. And we need that creative leader, right? For organizations in the maturation process. And then starting to how am I going to create a strategy that's going to help me differentiate and then execute upon it?
Yep. Well, you know, what I've seen, at least for marketers, right? So if I went to you and I said, I'll just ask you, if you're a sales leader, what do you use to run your organization? What do you use? It come to mind?
So for the typical responses that I get are Salesforce.
Right. Exactly. You're running right into my rhetorical questioning, right? And if you're a finance leader, use NetSuite. If you're an engineering leader, use GitHub. If you're a marketing leader, and maybe this is why the CMO position is on the decline, because like marketing leaders don't have software, right? They don't, right? They're basically like, they're asked to launch rocket ships and they're going and buying off the shelf technology that was built for like generic purposes and trying to cobble it all together. It's a patchwork quilt. Every single organization you go to. Now, when you get lower down in the ranks, like if you're a digital marketer, maybe you have HubSpot or you have some other suite of tools, or if you're a social media manager, you've got your tools, right? Like there's all these tools that are specific as it relates to getting closer to the consumer. But at the top, there's really nothing that you use to run your offense. I mean, there's stuff, but like it's not standardized, because if it was standardized, we wouldn't see the 99%, 1%, you know, problem, right? That we mentioned about alignment. And so, no one has solved this. And so like, that's the piece that I get to is like, you know, what tools are they taking off the shelf? So what's the standard model that we see? So like so many companies have standardized on what I lovingly refer to as a chuck it over the fence model. Oh yeah. You get this project management platform, you create an intake form, anybody can do marketing. And so like, there's like all these inbound requests that are completely void of context, completely void of strategy. They're one-off from one group. And you're sort of like performance is on how many tickets can you process? How much marketing content can you spin out for all these random factions, right? That's not running your business. Like what in what world does that help you build your brand? Like that helps you like put a bunch of content out in the world, but like, is it connected? Does it take a consumer on a journey? And then if that's the model, how are we supposed to do that at scale when you talk about personalization and all this stuff? Like, is it just different requests for different, like, how does that all work? Like, so I'm obsessed with what's a different model than the chuck over the fence model. I'm obsessed with an orchestration model. And I think it allows organizations to be more nimble and actually be aligned from a strategy and execution standpoint. I'm so convinced that that's where this has all got to go. But like to do that, a marketing leader needs a platform to run their business that isn't like, you know, like they're doing all humans right now. Like, hey, they'll ask a question and then someone's like, fire girl of the weekend, build a deck, whatever. Like that world I talked about back in the day, that still exists. Okay. We have work to do.
But as you say that, I start thinking about what we are seeing a lot of investment dollars are getting thrown into and a lot of products being created on in regards to account-based marketing in the B2B. Mm-hmm. ABM, solve all your problems. Is ABM going to solve my problems?
I think if you want to run an ABM strategy, you should buy an ABM platform for sure. But how does the ABM platform, how does ABM period plug into your overall go-to-market strategy for a calendar year, right? Or the next calendar year across different pillars, themes, audiences that you want to go tackle? Like what we see is a lot of people, it'll be like the tool tail will wag the strategic dog because these things aren't connected. And so like a digital marketer in a vacuum is just going to go do what they can do in their tool and execute a plan against what they know that they can go and do. But like, how does that actually connect the marketing leader strategy, right? Now, at a 3, 4, 5, 10 person marketing organization, maybe you don't have that problem, right? Maybe it's fine, right? And you can swivel chair around and that's fine, right? So there's definitely a threshold at which you need a system to coordinate all this stuff. But I think the idea that it's going to come from these sort of siloed strategy tools, like a social strategy with a social tool, a ABM's tool with its own strategy. Like, you know, these tools aren't going to like rise up and then be this thing, because they have to do everything they do here and here and here and here and be this thing. Like it's too big. And so there's still always going to be to your point about gaps earlier, right? There's always going to be gaps in all technology. There's always going to be like, we do everything way too differently as humans for there not to be. But I think that there's an opportunity for like some connective tissue to be built that allows you to kind of say, well, here's our ABM strategy and here's how it ties to our social strategy and here's how it ties to, you know, whatever strategy that we may, event strategy, whatever we're deploying, how does this all kind of come together into a big picture of what we're trying to achieve as an organization? And as the organization gets bigger, that fragmentation gets bigger. And so like a lot of our customers are huge because they're trying to solve this at a scale that like, you know, you can't even fathom when you're a 10-person marketing team.
Okay. So let's flip it the lens a little bit and look at who the heck is that 1%? What do you think they're doing and why they feel the way they feel?
Meaning, you know, what's funny. Yeah.
Meaning that the strategy and the execution is in alignment.
You know, I think that I'd love to just be like, oh, the 1% are Opal customers. That'd be a great answer. I don't know who they are. It was anonymous. I think that we have definitely solved this problem for some companies, but it's never just the tools thing. Like, again, the MarTech thing, you know, it's funny. Like, really what this comes down to is people, processes, and tools. So like tools, they're always going to have gaps. They're always going to be trying to stretch into areas where someone else does it better. And then it's just this like constantly like waves in a, you know, drum kind of bouncing off of each other or whatever. That's one side of it. But if you take the people and process side, people is like how you're orged, what the hierarchies are, you know, who does what, how you're kind of giving everybody, like, I'll just say that, right? Like org structure, different kinds of talent you have inside your organization. I think there's something to do with that. I don't know exactly what, but there's something to do with that, right? In terms of like, it just makes sense for how they go to market. They have certain, and then there's like the process side, which is like certain levels of autonomy might be part of your process. You know, you see some companies where they just, people get their marching orders. It's more of that orchestration model. Like Apple's model is purely orchestration. Like everything that comes through is like, we are planning this strategically as part of how we talk, like, and those bumper rails, like you go, you think, man, there's just so little room for creativity in that because everyone's telling me what to do, but somehow that company breaks through again and again and again and again and again. Right. And I know that's B2C, not your audience, but I think that there's like something to be said for what is the process that they deploy that allows them to drive that. Right. I think that that's part of it too. And like in a smaller context, like what we see, say for like B2B newsrooms, right? There's a lot of that, like where you have like a content marketing strategy going, you know, what's your process for bringing everything together on a periodic basis, right? So rather than saying all these units are operating independently, and then eventually, like sometimes as a leader, you see the con, you're like, wait, this is like that. And they're not even talking, like what? We've seen people institute a process of an editorial newsroom where they get together on Monday and they go, here's all the things we're doing the week across all these different teams that are doing content marketing. Let's do some air traffic controlling. Let's let's not have two things here. It's because the audience is the same. Let's merge it into one. And you're actually like orchestrating that. So, you know, if you kind of look bottoms down, top down, bottoms up, you know, I think you have to have some kind of model. Again, I go back, I use the word orchestration frequently because I think that's what this really is that you're able to kind of get everybody like operating, thinking together rather than like all the disparate units having total free will to go do whatever the heck they want to do. And I think that's probably the difference. And I think that knowing how to get everyone together like that is really, really hard, even within small teams, you know, 50, 100 person teams, like getting 500 people together, that's like an order of magnitude harder. So that's my hunch at it. It's a people and processes thing. And I think it's a tools thing to a degree. But I think it, like, you couldn't stand up Opal and have success with it if there wasn't some kind of cadence in which you're bringing people's attention to it. It's not a tool that's like at the channel level to like go do whatever. It's a group tool. It's a system.
Well, I think it's kind of going back to essentially where we started. As you talk about all organizations have some type of hierarchy, and that mm-hmm. is part of how we're being supported from a tool perspective.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And I think that the like I said, everything that a marketing leader uses for the most part is like a general purpose tool that is like, you know, it's like our strategies on this PowerPoint slide for the year, you know, and we get sent these can't even tell you, I probably had 200 of these in my career of like, hey, here's our strat plan. And like, can you get this going in Opal? And I think, that's, then there's like, well, here's our calendar. And it's like someone else, you look at like, that's a content calendar. That's a strategic calendar. How do you see, like, how does this all fit together? You know? And I think that we oftentimes get pulled in to help solve those problems. But if you don't create, if you don't like handle the people side of it and handle the process side of it, like the tool is just the tool to stand up and then, you know, not fail to launch. And you just got to have all three of those things. So that's the other part, I guess, maybe is that you have rigor around when you do change management. You know, I think that people that know how to do change management are like, we're going to be this kind of organization. I think they find success as well.
And hopefully you're not stuck in status meetings all day long and triple booked.
Hopefully.
George, a fantastic conversation today. How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
Great. Glad you asked here. I've got a short URL for you. It's opal.show/digital. And that's a link you can check out. I think there's a trial on there for our product. And if you want to, continue the conversation, I'm always open to these talks on platforms like LinkedIn. So you can find me there as well.
George Huff, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.